Hans Tansler III says he's the outsider who can shake up Washington. Just ahead, the candidate takes your calls. Good Thursday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9. You can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and the NPR One app and watch the show video on demand with our partner TVJax.com. Just ahead, Hans Tansler III on his campaign for Congress. Lots of you already calling in. Get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, the new social media campaign, Poetry Exposure, plus Judy Wells with some getaway ideas, plus The Spectator, all of that ahead. But first this hour, the top four candidates in the upcoming Republican primary for this area's 4th District congressional seat squared off last night in a televised debate on the JU campus. And for the most part, the four were on the same page on a range of conservative policy issues, but not all. This morning, we're speaking with one of those candidates, Hans Tansler III, attorney, businessman, and former executive director of the St. Johns River Water Management District, as he joins the program with more about his campaign. Hans Tansler, good morning, and thanks for being
with us.
Good
morning, Melissa. Thank you. It's great to be here.
Good to have you on the show. Lots of calls already for Hans Tansler III as we discuss his campaign for the CD4 seat in Congress being vacated by the retiring Andrew Crenshaw. What are your questions for the candidate? Get on the line right now. At 549-2937, that's 549-2937, or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email, tweet the show, or weigh in on our Facebook page. And so, fresh off the debate last night, televised on our partner, Channel 4, you and the other top-tier candidates in the race spoke about a range of policy issues as you run for Congress. In many respects, you're on the same page, but in particular, you, Mr. Tansler, have billed yourself as a conservative outsider in the race. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Yeah, happy to. One reason is that I've never before sought to be elected to a public office, and contrary to all the opponents that were there last night who are or have been incumbents or career politicians, and I'm also conservative. And so to the extent that I've never held office before as an elected official, then I'm an outsider.
You have billed yourself as the most conservative candidate in the race, as a matter of fact. Let's listen to one of your television ads that's aired recently, casting former Sheriff John Rutherford as not conservative enough for this seat. Let's listen.
There's a clear choice for Congress. Liberal John Rutherford grew government spending, fought for higher taxes, and opposed the NRA. Rutherford also made Jacksonville a sanctuary city for illegal immigrants. Conservative Hans Tansler is a businessman. He cut state government spending and wants to cut federal agencies like the IRS by 50%. And Hans Tansler is A-rated by the NRA. Conservatives choose Hans Tansler.
I'm Hans Tansler, and I approve this message.
Okay. Yesterday, former Sheriff Rutherford was in studio and took strong exception to your accusations. We're going to listen to just a short excerpt of that, and then I'd like to get your thoughts. Here's Rutherford.
I still believe in a moral war. I believe in self-defense. I have absolutely no problem with an officer using lethal force to capture an aggravated felony suspect. What I oppose and what I think is a degradation of the sanctity of life is when you take someone who's been locked up, they're no longer a threat to anyone, they're locked up, and you march them down a hall and take their life. I think that, that's a degradation of the sanctity of life.
Okay. You, Hans Tansler III, are saying that his position on the death penalty and a range of other issues is too liberal for the CD4 seat. This seems to be a race to the right, particularly in your campaign. Can you respond to what he's saying? And why do you feel that the voters are demanding this full-throated conservatism in this primary?
Well, first, regarding John's remarks, I do very much respect his moral ability to have his own freedom of belief under the First Amendment. And if that belief leads him to be against the death penalty, then so be it. But the death penalty, I believe, is fundamental with respect to the office of being a congressman. It's the office of being able to enforce laws, federal laws, and be able to take perhaps even harsh action against people who are trying to kill us. And so the ability to punish with the consequence of death is fundamental, whether it be somebody like Saddam Hussein, whether it be a terrorist, or whether it be a killer that may have murdered somebody. Murder itself can be vicious, and there needs to be consequences. So I believe that's important to not be against the death penalty. So I am for the death penalty.
And on your website, you also have listed a range of priorities in your campaign. Here are just a few of them. Pass a balanced budget amendment. Immediately cut the EPA, the Department of Labor, and the IRS by 50%. Eliminate the Department of Education and the Department of Housing and Urban Development. What would you say to those considering who to vote for who feel that those policy positions might be too extreme?
Well, that everybody's entitled to their own opinion. Take the Department of Education. To what extent does the federal government from Washington have the right or need to tell us what to do with the parent-teacher relationship here locally? When we have school boards and parents that know best for what's right for their children as to the curriculum to be educated. And so to the extent the federal government is trying to dictate that, it is overreaching. A lot of federal agencies are overreaching. Overreaching in that they're trying to exert authority over our state and local lives that goes beyond their original purpose and intent. And that includes EPA and education, like we mentioned, in certain HUD aspects. And there are several agencies that that go to the daily lives of us here in Duval County, St. John's, and Nassau that can be governed in Nassau and by the state of Florida. I mean, there's departments of different types. We have a Department of Environmental Protection that can regulate state of Florida's environmental protection, and we don't need a federal EPA to do that.
Let me ask you as well, you've accused Rutherford of setting up Jacksonville to be a so-called sanctuary city, a place that is too welcoming to undocumented immigrants. He denies that accusation. In your view, how is Jacksonville a sanctuary city?
Yes, thank you. That has been an interesting topic. It's often a tactic of career politicians to not want to perhaps own their record and to claim anyone who's trying to reveal light on the truth of the record to be one that is misrepresenting. But the reliance that I have on a Times Union article and in other periodicals is on RutherfordRecord.com. There's a Times Union article in July 2006 that quotes the sheriff to say to a group of illegal immigrants that he wishes to quell their fears or concerns that they would be arrested and deported if their identity and status was exposed. And so that articulation of the sheriff's policy, and the sheriff has the resources of the city in Duval County to enforce the laws. And if it chooses to not enforce the laws against the illegal immigrants, which committed the first crime of entering the country illegally, then it is giving sanctuary to them.
What data do you have to show that deportations out of Jacksonville aren't proceeding within the range of the law?
Well, the sheriff has no authority to deport anyone. I mean, only the federal government can deport. I believe he cites in an ad that 2,500 something have been processed for deportation. And that is likely those that have been arrested for a second crime. And then the process has commenced. And so the authority given to the local sheriff office is by the department, the federal government of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, is to do the paperwork. And then when I happened to have seen this firsthand, I asked him at a debate interview, well, of those that you gave paperwork, what percentage were deported, which goes to your question. And he answered he didn't know. And so,
but is that proof that we're a sanctuary city?
Well, what I'm relying on is the article where he says he will not enforce and try to, or they should not have anxiety over being arrested for being here illegally.
Okay. And let me ask you as well as a follow-up. We talked about the narrative of your campaign is that you're running as a conservative outsider, someone who's never held elective office. Let me ask you to react then to a piece about your campaign on the website Florida Politics. Tanzler, in reality, is an insider's insider, and fellow insiders have donated to his PAC in recent months, like charter school magnate Gary Chartrand, Bob Shercliffe, Ring Power. The carefully crafted perception is that Tanzler is a fresh face and a straight-talking, straight-shooting outsider, but the reality is that he himself is an insider, much more comfortable in a boardroom than on his ranch shooting a rifle from atop a horse. Your response?
Well, the ranch that my wife and I own, I love being there. We raise cows and we do some, we have a nursery, raise plants. I love being there. I'd rather have on my denims than the suit I have on now. And so no issue about that. But then the question of conservative outsider, I believe.
Right.
Yes.
Are you truly an outsider, given your connections, long history in the community, the son of the former mayor of Jacksonville?
Right. Yeah. Also, I remember you mentioning something about a PAC. Whatever the PAC is or does, I have no relationship to. I am, I believe, to be held accountable for what my ads, my campaign say. And to the extent an ad says that Ann Stanzler approves this message, it's based on some evidence that we're posting on this website. And to the extent there's issue with the Times Union and a quote, then perhaps the issue should be taken up with the Times Union. But I'm relying on that kind of past evidence. Those who have contributed to my campaign often, well, they are Republicans generally, and is often among the many Republicans in the three counties. And to that extent, that those same Republicans have contributed to other candidates and may have done so routinely, may be just a reality. And so the nature of that is something that I don't think taints me as being a part of the establishment, or is that perhaps a phrase? Because I've never run for public office. And so to that extent, I believe I am an outsider, and I definitely am conservative.
Let's go to your calls right now for Hans Tanzler III, one of the top-tier candidates in the open congressional contest happening now in Jacksonville. What are your questions? Let's begin with Roger on the west side. Hi, Roger. Good morning.
Hello.
Yes. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for having me on. Mr. Tanzler, I saw you on TV last night, and I have to tell you, going into the debate, I was thinking I was going to be a Rutherford supporter, but you sounded great on TV last night and made me rethink sort of my position. My question is, and I'll take it off the air, there was an issue last night. They didn't discuss the sheriff's budget. I see some of your ads on TV saying Rutherford's a bad guy because he increased his budget by $100 million. I think the real number is something like $150 or $200 million. But the question is, why wouldn't we want a large sheriff's budget? Don't you think it's important to fight crime? You know, all those resources should be trying to solve Florida being the murder capital of Florida. Excuse me, Jacksonville being the murder capital of Florida. So don't you think it's important for the sheriff to have a large budget to help fight crime?
Okay, Roger. Thank you. Yeah, that's Roger on the west side.
Yeah, Roger, thank you. And thank you for your open remarks. The ad, I believe, that cited his budget did not come from my campaign. But on the other hand, the budget is so public. It is public record. And part of that public record is the sheriff's office budget. But also numerous past articles are about the first 5 years where the sheriff's budget increased 30%, $100 million. And he was seeking a tax increase to pay for it. And so then comes the question of where did the $100 million, how is it being spent? And then the same article speaks of it going primarily to salary increases and pension benefits. But when looking at his entire career, you look at what are the number of policemen on the ground, and that's remained about around 1,600 from the beginning of his career to the end. And so there seems to not have been a meaningful increase in policemen, notwithstanding the dramatic increase in budget. And so say that increase the budget to increase enforcement didn't seem to be a reality in his administration.
Laureen in Riverside. Hi, Laureen. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Go ahead.
Hans, I saw you last night on TV, and you mentioned a little bit about you have federal experience and that sets you apart. I was wondering if you could expand and explain why the sheriff's maybe isn't the best qualified based on some of your ads.
Well, the federal, this is a federal job we're seeking, of course, U.S. Congress. And the federal experience I have is with the federal government for 5 years in Miami, in the worst years of Miami's history, perhaps, during the narco-terrorism years, the Mariel Beaulieu, Scarface.
What was your title then?
Assistant U.S. Attorney, and also did a brief tour in the Treasury Department just mm-hmm. prior to that, doing the investigations and recommendations for prosecution.
And by the way, we have a tweet about that. Did Hans Tansler ever work for the IRS? Last night, during the debate, he said he fought them.
I think they're
referring to your time with Treasury. No?
No. After that 5 years expired, but going back to your question just for a moment, as a federal prosecutor, our job was to represent all federal agencies in the crimes that are being committed and to put criminals in jail that committed those crimes. And so federal law enforcement with the Department of Justice as assistant U.S. attorney is a critical piece of experience because the Department of Justice I worked for then was in the business of putting people in jail effectively. The one we see now has perhaps been hijacked. And so after that 5-year experience, I then went into the private sector and then became the tax attorney that I was trained to be, and then fought against the IRS.
How did you do that?
Well, you have individuals and businesses that have problems with the IRS. And to that extent, the individual would engage my services, and then I would fight against the IRS to resolve their problem. And it took many forms. I mean, you talk to them before you take them to court, or perhaps you do take them to court. You don't fight in a fist fight, but you fight nevertheless using every legal means you can. And so during that period, I became very schooled about the IRS from the outside, and also while briefly working for the IRS in Miami through Treasury Department, I became very schooled from the inside. So if anybody can reform the IRS, I believe I can with the basis of experience I have.
All right, and we have jam phone lines for Hans Tansler III, one of the candidates running for Congress in this CD4 district. The primary is set for August 30th, but early voting is underway now. Dave probably cannot. Oh, you might be in the district. Dave on Amelia Island is on the line. Hi, Dave. Good morning.
Good morning. I have a hope is a quick question and a follow-up. The hottest 10 years on record have all occurred within this century. NASA, the people that make it a point of studying climate, have determined that man-made climate change is a fact. There's really no debate within the scientific community. And yet you are talking about eliminating the EPA. Why would we not want to have a check on industry when we know full well that time and time again, industry experts have done everything they can to promote their own wealth gain as opposed to the general welfare of the American public?
Yes, well, good question. Thank you. And the hottest period in the last 10 years, if it has been then so be it. The question of whether it's man-made or a natural cycle, you know, is one that still is out there. But I don't refute what you say. The EPA, the federal EPA, is redundant to the state Department of Environmental Protection. And so it becomes a question of to what extent should the federal government begin to dictate to the state of Florida what should be the environmental protection laws within Florida that might even be consistent or inconsistent with Florida's reality that is best known by the Department of Environmental Protection, that is a Florida state agency. And so environmental protection is definitely important. It's something that is protected by the water management districts, but also by the job of the Florida DEP.
Let me ask you as a follow-up, though. Florida, alone among the 50 states, is uniquely threatened by sea level rise, which is already a reality in South Florida. The EPA, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, NASA, NOAA, the National Park Service, all federal authorities and agencies are already beginning the work of planning for sea level rise in this state and protecting federal monuments like the Castillo de San Marcos and San Augustine and a range of other coastal locations. At the same time, according to the latest Gallup poll, now nearly 50% of conservatives in this country believe in the issue of climate change, and believe that sea level rise is not only an existential threat, but a national security issue. So let me ask you, as you seek this seat in Congress from Florida and from a coastal area, is it realistic to call for the elimination of the entire federal agency dedicated to dealing with this issue of climate change, which is going to be an economic and sociological issue for Florida?
Yes. Let me first say straight off that I do believe the sea level is rising. As executive director of St. John's Water Management District, we measured that. If there's a debate, it's a question of how fast is it rising and is the rise being accelerated, and what is the projection of its future rise. And so that issue is very acute in Jacksonville, because the St. John's River at the mouth of Mayport is obviously sea level, but it's sea level also all the way to Orlando. And so as the sea rises, so will the river. And so it will have effect within Florida with respect to wetlands and other environmental issues that surround the river for about 100, 150 miles. And so the sea level is rising. Army Corps of Engineers is very, very familiar with that. St. John's Water Management, very familiar with that. I think just about every environmental protection agency is familiar with that. And I don't think they dispute it. The question of environmental protection agency, if I said eliminate it completely, I may have overspoken. What I really want, or what I would advocate, is that it not extend its reach into Florida and be redundant to the Florida Department of Environmental Protection. And so the federal government agencies need to get back to Washington. And then once they're back to Washington, if their purpose is not needed in Florida, or maybe not needed at all, then they can be reduced and conceivably eliminated.
What would you say to those who feel that the DEP hasn't adequately assessed the issue of sea level rise in the state just due to political factors? Last year, we read that employees tasked with looking at this data weren't even allowed to use the phrase climate change in their reports.
Well, that issue and that discussion, you know, has its own tempest in a teapot factor. But I left the Water Management District about maybe 18 months ago. And from what I saw, there were teams of scientists working together that totally acknowledge that the sea level is rising, and then also studying the effect of that and the impacts on wetlands and environmental systems. And so I saw that within Florida's DEP and saw it within the Water Management and the Army Corps. So I don't think there's any issue personally that it is rising.
Let's go to Bob on the west side now as we take a slew of calls for Hans Tanzler III. Hi, Bob. Good morning.
I wanted to know, what's the deal with the earmarks? Because you seem to be the only candidate that is against the earmarks, and I don't really understand what they are.
Okay, let's talk about earmarks. You've criticized your opponent, John Rutherford, for his position on this, and Congress recently basically did away with the practice of earmarks. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, earmarks are the tagging on, almost like putting ornaments on a Christmas tree, of items of expenditure that may not really relate to the purpose and substance of the bill.
You could call it pork barrel as well,
you could,
right?
Indeed. Okay. And so members of Congress, particularly with seniority, they control committees and control the promotion of bills that can be considered by the House or Senate, have a way of tacking on these ornaments, and the pork then therefore gets attached. That is, I think, one of the reasons why I'm running, is that we are spending too much. We are spending on things that have very little purpose. We're spending on things that have only political expediency for someone, maybe preserving self-interest. In reality, we should only be spending to enhance the life of all the citizens of the United States, and not for a rogue expenditure that may relate to building a bridge to nowhere in Alaska or whatever else it might be.
What would you say to, and certainly earmarks were roundly criticized for many years. What would you say, though, to those who are now looking at an unintended consequence of basically doing away with them, which is that, for example, former House Speaker John Boehner, now current House Speaker Paul Ryan, they really have a diminishing set of tools at their disposal to get to whip their caucus, to get unity on important votes and important issues. Earmarks were a tool that were used, carrot and stick type of mechanism, to get people on the same page to vote for either the Democratic or Republican Party priorities.
Yes, they were. They were pieces of candy, perhaps, handed out to motivate the support of a bill. But that candy starts getting expensive, and it starts exacerbating our budget deficit and our $19 trillion in debt, which is bigger than our entire economy. And so the system of doing that, I believe, is flawed. The opportunity is for people like me, if we become more in number, to be able to promote a system where bills for appropriations relate to the appropriation in the bill and not for the incidentals.
Let's go to Albert, Julington Creek, this morning. Hi, Albert.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me, and thanks for these interviews. It's very informative and a joy being here from the candidates. And Hans, thank you for putting your name out there and running. I got to say, I'm really disappointed, though, in the amount of negative ads that are out there. And I'm just wondering how you feel personally about Sheriff Rutherford and about your opponents, and I'll take your answer offline. Thank you.
Okay. I think that's a fair point to say that however you feel about the ads, you have run the most negative ads that I've seen anyway. What about that?
Yes, happy to remark on that, and also happy to say that the sheriff and I grew up in the same side of town. I went to Lee High School, he went to Forest, he played baseball, I played basketball, you know, and I very much liked the man. And so the question of negative ads, you know, here's a proposition. If a candidate, perhaps a career politician, is representing something to be true that is actually not true, and perhaps representing in his own ads, then is it negative if I merely expose the untruth of that representation? You know, is there an obligation to almost do that on behalf of citizens, you know, in addition to revealing truth? And so every one of the ads by my campaign that I approve are based on a record and based on some form of evidence that I'm relying upon. And you'll see many of them on RutherfordRecord.com. And so it goes to the whole proposition of what is negative. Is revealing truth negative? You know, certainly it would be negative if you misrepresented the truth. And so I wrestle with that question. I mean, I very much oppose something that is obviously would misrepresent the truth. I would not endorse it. But if it is making things aware to the public that is otherwise being misled and is otherwise part of history that often career politicians don't want to acknowledge, and to the extent that truth is revealed, then I happen to think that it's not negative.
And let me ask you as a final question. If you were elected to represent this district, what would be your top priorities for Jacksonville?
Well, the top priorities are, of course, to represent all the constituents of the three counties within District 4. And having grown up here and obviously being familiar with Jacksonville, top priorities include, first and foremost, of course, the military and being on the Armed Services Committee and trying to continue the progress made by Congressman Crenshaw in supporting our various bases, NES, Mayport, and Kings Bay, and the Air National Guard at Imeson. And then comes taking the other aspects of Jacksonville's interest. There's economic development. There's a question of port expansion. There's a question of further dredging of the river, which I happen to be fairly expert about. But on the other hand, the priority I would have, it would be based on my cultivation of the priorities of the constituents. And so as they're cultivated, then I would form my priorities and then try by teamwork and by cajoling and by partnering with other neighboring colleagues, like in District 5 and 6, and, you know, would exclude DeSantis and Yoho and perhaps in 5, and to advance those causes, because we're all part of Northeast Florida. And we have to find common priorities.
Well, we appreciate you being with us. And as I said, early voting is underway now, so get out and vote. Hans Tansler III, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Melissa. Thank you.
And we'll be joined by another candidate in this race, Bill McClure, on Monday. Meanwhile, you can check out candidate profiles and more election information at wjctnews.org. Much more still ahead later, The Spectator with a few ideas for your weekend. Judy Wells is coming too, but up next, we've got a look at the new social media campaign, Poetry Exposure. Back in a moment.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, health insurance giant Aetna will stop selling insurance through most state exchanges created by the Affordable Care Act. It's the third major insurer to pull back. Who's affected? What it means for the future of the ACA. At 10 o'clock on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Hi, I'm Steve Woodard, the Director of Emergency Preparedness for the City of Jacksonville. Knowing your evacuation zone is critical to your safety. Listen to emergency management for important evacuation information. Stay informed at jacksready.com and tune to 89.9, the designated emergency broadcaster for Northeast Florida.
This segment is brought to you by Colo CSX Data Center Hosting Solutions.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday through Saturday nights on 89.9 when we bring you music from around the world. All styles played, all songs considered. Join me for the Electro Lounge, Tuesday through Saturday nights.
Welcome back. Well, this is a really interesting way to both celebrate poetry and your favorite public personalities. Through her innovative new campaign, Poetry Exposure, WJCT's own employee, Kat Davis, is using social media to both expose new writers' work and at the same time get celebrities into the conversation. She joins us now with more about it. Kat Davis, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thanks for being here. And this is brilliant because I've known for some time that you're a writer, you're a poet, and like a lot of us, we follow our favorite celebrities on social media, and sometimes they might even tweet us back, which is so exciting. You're using poetry to further this idea. How did you come up with this?
Well, it started with just me being a little bored, I guess. I'd finished doing a novel, and then after that, I decided, why not write some poetry? And I've always liked poetry, and so I thought, well, this might be a little interesting sidebar to do, you know, until I finished going back to my book.
Right. And so what you do, now this is such a cool concept, and tell me if I'm explaining this right. You write a poem about a celebrity. You put it on social media so that they can see it, and then the idea is to get celebrities to respond and maybe read the poems themselves.
Well, it's more than just celebrities.
And it's more than just celebrities.
It's anyone, actually, on social media. It's anyone that you follow or someone that follows you. I started doing it as a means to get people to talk to each other versus just being sociable. Mm-hmm. When they post a picture, Snapchat, Instagram, it's very quick. But with poetry, it gives you a moment to kind of say, I've been observing what you're doing online through all forms. And so when you're talking to people and you say, wait a minute, I wrote a poem about you. I'd really love for you to do it. The poem is one page long. It can't be longer. It can be shorter. And if you can recite it, memorize it, read it in front of wherever you are in the world, that would be great. And you upload it. And that's it. You know, it's a way to connect people, and it's for any country, any language, anyone.
Right. Anyone can write a poem about anyone else.
Absolutely.
And as an homage to them, a way to just communicate with them, using the hashtag Poetry Exposures.
Right.
Such a brilliant idea. And in fact, I know you love Viola Davis. I love her too.
I do.
You've written one that you want to Viola Davis to know of, and we're going to listen to it right now.
Okay. She did the InStyle cover magazine.
Right.
On it, it says, How to Get Away with the Best Year Ever. And I thought, you know what? I'm always watching what she does on social media. She uses it as a platform to expose her life and who she is. And I thought, you know what? Why not just write a poem about her? And I'd love for her to do it. It's called The Best Year Ever is Every Year. And this is how it goes. My life is more than my acting career is what should be proclaimed. On social media outlets, people really know my name. You watch me on the telly, silver screen, and the Great White Way. I was blessed to win a Tony, SAG, and make history with an Emmy. Each Monday, I send words of encouragement that have been given to me. What do you think of Julius Tenen? God blessed me. As you can tell, God is not reckless or a spell. Me and Julian adopted a beautiful little girl. We became Black Love in 2016 in a documentary with truth, love, and a whole lot of honesty. I do what I do because I know the entertainment industry is not quick to grow when it comes to people like me. I'm just glad to set the course and advance so many others in a diverse sea of destiny. I'm Viola Davis. I work tirelessly to show the world that God made you, me, and everything. Let this be my everlasting legacy. The best year ever is every year and means so much when you're living your dream.
Oh, that's great.
And this is the challenge. Anyone can do poetry exposures. What are the simple steps?
Well, you know, it doesn't matter if you're a writer or not. People that you follow tell you who they are. It's like talking to them on the phone. It's like talking to you right now, Melissa.
Uh-huh.
And so when they tell on themselves, as I say, you start writing down little things about who they are, what they're doing. And you just write the poem. And then if they basically talk to you through social media, say, hey, I wrote this poem about you. I want to send it to you. Do you feel like, you know, reading it, reciting it, memorizing it, acting it out, upload it? Everyone has a cell phone. You have a recording device. Record it. Send it there. Send it to hashtag Poetry Exposures. And if you find me on...
And keep the campaign going.
Keep the campaign going. Go to any language, any country. And hey, if you follow me on Instagram, I'm at cat5347. I've already done two, but I'd love for everyone else to do it. I want to include everyone else.
I'm going to do one later today about our own spectator. How about that? That'll kick things off with a bang.
Yeah.
And for me anyway. And and I'll do one about you too, Kat. And upload the video. And I challenge all our listeners to do the same. Use the hashtag Poetry Exposures. Write a poem about someone you care about or someone you follow on social media. Write it and then upload it with a little video clip and keep it rolling along as we connect the world through poetry and the talent and vision of our own Kat Davis, a friendly face to many who come through the front door of WJCT every single day. And I can't wait to read your book, by the way, when it's published.
God, that's a side thing to do.
Kat Davis, everybody. Oh. And the hashtag is Poetry Exposures. Do it from any social media platform. We'll be right back.
WJCT and Community First Credit Union are pleased to announce that Pedro Noguera, national expert on public education in America, is this year's morning keynote speaker at Teach, Saturday, October 8th at the Hyatt Regency Hotel. Tickets are $30. For more information, visit wjct.org/teach.
On the next Fresh Air, the microbes that live in and on our bodies and how they contribute to our digestion, immunity, the triggering and suppression of inflammation, body weight, general health, and disease. We talk about microbiome research, including whether probiotics are actually beneficial, with Ed Yong, author of the new book, I Contain Multitudes. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
It's an all-star performance of an all-time classic. Pianist Garrick Olson teams up with conductor Vladimir Ashkenazi and the Swiss-Italian Orchestra. We'll hear their performance of the Piano Concerto No. 5, the Emperor Concerto by Beethoven, on the next Performance Today from APM. Weeknights at 7 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, from the Wintergreen Resort in Virginia, special deals from St. Augustine to India, to a Christmas ball at Downton Abbey. Off, Actually, I'm being told Downton Abbey is a no-go, but it doesn't matter because we're going roaming now with the great Judy Wells this morning. Hey, Judy.
Good morning.
How you doing?
I am fine. I'm invigorated by fresh Virginia mountain air with tones of hay and apples and fruit.
Is that where you just were, Virginia?
That's where I just was, and at Wintergreen Resort, which is known by most as Virginia's largest and fanciest ski resort with 24 runs and tubing and all the rest of that stuff. But it is so convenient to a lot of people that it has become a summer getaway as well.
Interesting.
And I love ski areas for summer getaways.
Uh-huh. And so if you go to the website wellsworld.net, Judy has all about this resort and some special charms and deals at the
Wintergreen Resort. Well, nearby, but I was with a bunch of golf riders, and I decided I've seen golf courses. I've cursed at golf courses. I want to see what else is there. So I went around Nelson County, and I found an orchard that's older than America.
Pre-revolutionary.
James Dickey, a sea captain, received land grants from King George II in 1752, 1756, and 1780. The family still has the farm, still runs it as an orchard, and still has those land grants. And they grow, you know, there are more than 7,000 varieties of apples.
Get out of here.
Who knew? There are.
Who knew? Judy Wells knew.
Well, I do now. Dickey Brothers Orchard, they grow 20 different apple varieties, along with lots of other fruit. In a county of 15,000 residents, 500,000 bushels of apples are grown each year, 17,000 of those from Dickey Brothers Orchard. It's a wonderful place. You'll love it. Also, got the best hard cider at Bold Rock Cidery in Rockfish Valley I have ever had. Thanks primarily, I think, to New Zealander Brian Shanks, who is known as the Johnny Appleseed of hard cider in the world, internationally.
Okay. All right, so that's Wintergreen. Now, you also want to clue us in to some special travel deals that only Judy Wells knows about, and these range all the way from St. Augustine to India.
Yes, but the B&B special at Wintergreen this fall. Breakfast per night of stay at the Coppermine Bistro, which is grand. Unlimited access to aquatics and fitness center. Rates that begin at $74 per person per night. The offer is valid through November 23rd. And I've got all that information on my website. St. Augustine, the Sir Francis Inn and Casa de Sueños. Stay for two nights, Sunday through Thursday.
I have been to the Casa de Sueños.
I have not, but I've been to the St. Francis Inn.
That's a great little place. Yeah,
that's a great little place, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Now until September the 29th, and you'll get dinner and a cruise at no additional cost.
Oh, very nice.
A two-hour sail on the tall ship Schooner Freedom and a $30 gift certificate to Meehan's Irish Pub and Seafood House.
All in St. Augustine?
All in St. Augustine. Now, the most inexpensive trip I have ever heard of to India is just, I can't believe it. World Spree's a 12-day Incredible India Tour starts as low as $1,399 in December and April, and that includes round-trip airfare on Air China from San Francisco, Los Angeles, and New York, $100 more for Houston. All transportation in India, five-star hotels, daily international.
For $1,000?
$1,400.
Get out of here.
Baggage handling, six other meals, sightseeing tours, all that thing. And if you fly Air China via Beijing, you can take advantage of China's new 72-hour visa-free transit program and stop over in Beijing on the way home for 3 days and two nights for only $200.
Very nice. All of this is at wellsworld.net. And where are you headed next, my friend?
Well, you know, I'm not sure. I'm going to try to get
that's up. That's unprecedented.
It is unprecedented. I was thinking about going to Trinidad and Tobago and decided.
Of course you are. You're Judy Wells.
My schedule was just too full as it was. I've got some writing to do. I've got to pay for my travel.
You're actually going to stay in town for a while.
Yes, I'm going to stay in town for
a while. Again, it's wellsworld.net for all of your travel needs. And if you're staying around town this weekend, finally this hour, we've got lots of options for you to pick from. I'm coming up, so you better get this party started. from Boney James to Vanderpump Rules. Here she is to take us all around town. The mistress of mayhem, the maven of mirth, the spectator.com's Carrie Speckman here today. And, you know, I actually spoke on the phone the other day with Boney James.
That guy
has sold about 1,000,000,000,000,000,000 jazz albums.
That is a lot.
It's quite a few. And he's coming to the Florida Theater.
He is. He will be here tonight. Again, at the Florida Theater.
Yeah. And I did not realize this, but they call him Boney James because when he started out, he was a struggling musician, starving musician. And some other session musician was like, "You're looking pretty bony." It was because he was poor.
That will never happen to me. Well, yeah. Not the poor part, but the not eating part will not happen. I will never be Boney Speckman.
I know. But neither will I. But it's Boney James, 4-time Grammy nominee and multi-platinum selling saxophonist. Virtuoso tonight at the Florida Theater. Go see him. Okay.
I think we should do this tomorrow, Melissa. We should go try out for the North Florida Pumas.
This is tackle football.
It's women's tackle football.
There are some people I'd like to tackle. And,
oh.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
We'll talk about that off the air.
We'll talk about that another time. But yeah, I think I'll pass on that. But I didn't even know.
I would cry. Just putting on a helmet is too heavy.
See, I'd be the opposite. I'd probably, you know.
Oh, you would hurt people?
I'd hurt people.
Not me. I would cry.
But I didn't know this was a thing.
Yes.
Okay.
They had a team before. I don't know if this is new or. But anyway, it's Bay Meadows and 9A Regional Park on Saturday, if you like to try out, 9 to noon.
Okay. Now, also Saturday, Jax Taylor from Vanderpump Rules is hosting a ladies' night out at Sweet.
I'm sure Vanderpump Rules is one of your favorite shows.
I watch it religiously. No, I have no idea.
He's a bartender.
What's on that show?
The hot bartender causing all the trouble with the ladies.
Got it.
So it's ladies' night out at Sweet, and he will be there being hot and
and pouring drinks.
Yes.
Also Saturday, the Armada play Minnesota at home at Community First Park.
Correct.
And on Saturday, it's the Jacksonville Zombie Walk Car Wash.
I just thought this was funny. You know, there's a Jacksonville Zombie Walk every year, and this is to help them raise money to put on the event. So they will be doing a car wash dressed as zombies.
That's fine.
And it will be at the Advanced Auto Parts on Cassett.
On Cassett Avenue.
Yes.
Now,
beware.
Beware of the zombies. What is Retro-Rama Collectibles presents Fan Lexicon?
It's one of those, like a Comic-Con.
Like a Comic-Con thing.
Yes. Where this is 2 days, and they will have celebrity guests, video game tournaments, panels, screenings, displays. Special guests include George Lowe, the voice of Space Ghost. And Samantha Newark, Jim, from Jim and the Holograms.
My daughters insisted on going to that movie. We went in and saw it. We were the only people in the theater. Oh, only time in my life Jim. That's ever happened.
Was it a live action one or was it animated?
No, it's live action, but it was inspired by the cartoon from
right.
when we were kids.
Well, if you want to go say, tell that great story to Jim.
I will.
She will be at the Lexington Hotel.
Is that where they're doing this?
Yes.
Okay.
Saturday and Sunday.
Sunday, Bucks.
She probably doesn't want to hear that, though.
Bucks versus Jags preseason, open practices.
These are still going on.
Still
you go
going
to Jacksons.com,
on.
Jaguars.com.
And last but not least, how about this? I'm a big fan of Lyle Lovett, and he is coming Sunday to the Florida Theater.
With his big band.
With his large band, yes.
And I always say, like, how much more money would he make if he would just cut down on the size of his band?
With his medium-sized band?
Yeah. Or his small band.
It doesn't
acoustic.
Sound nearly as
he
good.
He could just do acoustic. A night with Lyle Lovett.
He has been named the official musician of Texas.
I would believe that.
The Texas state musician.
He comes here a lot.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying he's here a lot. He should just get a house here.
How about that?
I have a keg to sleep on my couch. He probably wouldn't fit, though. He's very tall.
He must have a huge fan base in Jacksonville.
He does. I actually saw him last year. He was really, really good.
He's great live. Go see Lyle Lovett Sunday at the Florida Theater and go to thespectator.com. If you heard an event you want to find out more about, she's got all of that on her website. And as you would say, it's been a pleasure and an inconvenience.
As Gallagher would say.
Always good to see you.
Always a delight.
That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum is running the board, and the show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. Make sure to subscribe to our daily podcast on iTunes and watch the show with video on demand at our partner, TVJax.com. Next on Diane Rehm, health insurance giant Aetna will stop selling insurance through most state exchanges created by the Affordable Care Act. It's the third major insurer to pull back from Obamacare. Who's affected and what this means for the future of the ACA? That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow for our Friday Media Roundtable. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.